Hello and welcome back to the Golden Hurricast, a weekly podcast covering Golden Hurricane athletics at the University of Tulsa. I'm Ryan Token.
I'm Matt Rechteen, and the Golden Hurricast is generally 30-ish plus 5 or so minutes long, so let's get started.
Stay golden.
Hurricane.
Okay, so had a couple games last week. Want to break those down. It was a weird week, kind of a rough week. We did go 1-1, but it was not a week where we wanted to go 1-1. We would have really hoped to go 2-0, especially against these two teams that we were playing. We were on the road for both games, right, at Temple and then at East Carolina, and dropped the Temple road game, which really hurts, especially looking at them today. They played Tulane in Philadelphia, home game for Temple. Played Tulane, bought of the conference team, and lost by 17. The Owls lost by 17 to Tulane at home. So that makes this Temple loss look even worse for us, which we will go into because it was a bad one and we look terrible, but that hurts.
Yeah, I would say this is like even more so than like, oh, we had hoped to go into it. Like, this is a week we needed to, and like we very much should have. Like, there's no reason for us to go in like a 1-1. Like we did. Very disappointing, especially how we looked at the start of that Temple game.
It was super disappointing. We looked really bad. We were down 22 to Temple near the end of the first half. It was just terrible. We looked asleep to start the game. I don't know if it's just like road fatigue. You know, we've played, what is it, like six of our last seven games have been on the road. And, you know, maybe that's just road fatigue or whatever. You know, we didn't look super, super great against East Carolina. We did win that game. You know, we won by 9 and looked significantly better than we did against Temple. So I don't know what the deal was playing at Temple, because that is not a good basketball team. Like, they're not like the worst, but they're not like a good team. You know, that's not a game we should have lost by 9. It's not a game we should have been down by 22 in the first half. It just looked bad pretty much all around. It was weird, right? It actually, you know, may have been a turning point for Frank Haith, it seemed. We looked so bad in that game that after the game, Kelly Hines tweeted out that Frank Haith said, quote, "We've just got to figure out who we're going to play. Some of these guys we've given opportunities to, and maybe we need to look at doing some different things," which I want to break down this quote here for a second. So sentence one, it's a two-sentence quote, right? Sentence one, "We've just got to figure out who we're going to play." Yes, coach, that's like job number one for you as a head coach. Like, why is that the quote 3/4 of the way through the season? "We've got to figure out who we're going to play." This is like, we talk about this, you know, every year we've done this podcast. This is year 3. We've talked about it every year with basketball. It always takes Frank Haith so freaking long to figure out who the guys are going to be every year. Why? Why does it take this long? I don't understand. Like, from early on, you could tell, like, you know, Curtis Haywood had not been playing well to start the year. He had like 2 games there early to mid of the season so far where he looked okay, and then he's looked pretty terrible the rest of the games. So for some reason, we give him 30 plus minutes every game. He's getting the most minutes consistently every game, aside from this East Carolina game, but we'll get there. That happens. Same thing with Keyshawn Emory-Simpson, right? He's also getting massive amounts of minutes most games. So this game happens, and we look terrible. Curtis Haywood does go 3-for-4, so good on him for shooting 75%. But still, like, aside from those made shots, he just does not look good out there. He doesn't look confident. He looks lost. He's not good on defense. He should not be playing the most minutes on the team. Easily. Like, no question. And so that, you know, quote number two there is, some of these guys we've given opportunities to, and maybe we need to look at doing some different things. So he does follow up on his word. So that quote was after the Temple game when we got embarrassed on the road in Philadelphia. East Carolina game comes along and he follows through, right? Curtis Haywood still starts fine. He's weird with starting players, but he goes from 34 minutes against Temple to 24 minutes against East Carolina. And Austin Ritchie gets the start. Plays 27 minutes, so his minutes are way up compared to the Temple game where he only played
And he looked great.
13 minutes. Yeah, he looked awesome. He came out firing. He was like 4 for 5 for his first 5 threes or something like that. And also Darian Jackson minutes go way up. So Darian Jackson played 20 against East Carolina. He played 27 or 20 against Temple. He played 27 against East Carolina. So if the shift is Haywood's minutes go down and Jackson and Richie go up, that is exactly what I'm looking for, right? So that feels good to me.
I mean, how long has Jackson been on the team where it's like every year I feel like we have this, like, why isn't Jackson playing more? Like, we do better when Jackson gets more minutes. And then, wow, here we go again. You're like in Jackson's senior year and we're like, oh, you know what? Let's play him more. And he looks so good, especially closing games out. Like, Jackson is easily, I think, our best finisher just because his defense is so good. But we don't sacrifice offense when he's out there.
Yeah, he's so good defensively. He's he's easily the highest shooting percentage on the team. He's got one of the best shooting percentages in the conference, maybe the best. I don't know. But it's, you know, people were talking about it over the week with, like, he's got a chance to be one of Tulsa's all-time great field goal percentage finishers as his career ends here. And it's no surprise, right? He's been like that his whole time at TU. He's gotten a lot of playing time over the years.
Yeah, he's 10th nationally.
Nice. Yeah. So, like, it's amazing. And the fact that the guy doesn't get as many minutes as goddamn Curtis Haywood on the team, I do not understand. Fortunately, it looks like the tides might be turning in Darian's favor there. But he's still, like, 27 against East Carolina. I still would like to see him get in the 30-plus minute range. You know, Joyner's getting 31. Rochelle's getting 36 against East Carolina. Idowu got 32. First of all, he had a hell of a week, so we'll talk about him in a sec, too. But Jackson should be in that range. You know, he's closer with 27 now, and I know you can't give everybody 30 minutes, but, you know, play him as much as possible. I feel like he's a guy who I wish was starting. He should be getting maybe the most minutes on the team of anybody. I love his game, man. He does everything right. He did force a few kind of uncharacteristically forced threes against ECU. He shot, what was it? Shot three of them. Went 0-for-3. Mm-hmm. He's not a three-point shooter. Like, that usually doesn't happen for him. He's shot like
He had that one streak last year that started against Houston, and then he went for a couple games. But I don't think that was indicative of his true shooting percentage.
Yeah, it's weird. And, like, the percentage and whatever, but, like, even the fact that he put up three this game, like, usually that's not even happening. And the ones he – and when he does put them up, and I'm fine with him shooting because he's shown that he can make them every now and then, but, like – and he shoots so rarely that it's even more okay with me. But some of the shots against East Carolina were just not, they weren't open threes. They were forced. And I was like, man, of all the people, it's going to be you doing this too? So, you know, that was kind of disappointing. But whatever, you know, he does so much good. It makes up for the every now and then not great three-point attempts.
Well, and so I think this week, just kind of with the Temple and the Tulsa game, or Temple and Tulsa, we're Tulsa, Temple and East Carolina just showed that, like, yeah, we do better when we don't take as many threes, but I think it's really we do better when we don't, when, like, the bad shooters don't take as many threes and we have our good shooters taking more. Like, Austin Ritchie should be taking a surplus of our team's threes. Like, we should not be having guys like Darian Jackson, even though he does it rarely, but, like, even Curtis Haywood. I mean, Curtis Haywood did well against Temple for three, which is kind of nice to see that. But I mean, yeah, Richie is the one who should be taking a lion's share of our threes, because then I feel like we're actually in decent position.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, that's totally right. It's all about shot selection, moving the ball, and when we've got our good three-point shooters taking more three-pointers, that's clearly going to be a good thing. And so that led to the East Carolina win, right? Austin Richie shot 9 of them, easily the most on the team. The next most was Darian Jackson with 3, and then Rochelle only took 2 compared to he took 6 against Temple. So you know, people, you know, have their different games, but we definitely play better when our better three-point shooters are shooting the three balls. So yeah, that leads us to now. We are 9-6 overall, 6-4 in the American. Last Sunday we were number 87 in KenPom. We are still number 87. There was obviously some movement during the week, but we are back at 87 now, 85 in the net. And, like, for, you know, thinking of some other guys that played well this week, Ray Dowu, right? Can't go on much longer without talking about him. That guy had a hell of a week. He had career-high 20 points against Temple, 7-for-11 shooting, and against ECU, he had another 16, 8 rebounds, like, just played a beast of a game. And the guy, you know, he gets, like, almost overly fired up. You know, he makes a shot and, like, freaks out, and I like it. You know, I like the fire. And I just love the way that he plays. He's so much faster down low than Ugbo. And Ugbo, you know, he didn't play poorly either of those games necessarily. His minutes were pretty minimal. He had 6 against Temple and also 6 against East Carolina. So he's probably following into where he's going to be the rest of the year. And Idowu finally got the start against ECU. I think maybe his first start of the year. I think Ugbo has started every other time. Is that right? Am I getting that wrong?
I mean, that seems right. I'd have to go back and double check if it was every game, but yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. So, I mean, it seems like, you know, the starting lineup against East Carolina, which came after Frank Haith's comments on, we got to maybe play some different people. The starting lineup was Ray Idowu, Austin Ritchie, Curtis Haywood, Elijah Joyner, Brandon Rochelle. Almost the perfect starting lineup. Curtis Haywood, swap him for Darian Jackson. I think we're in the money there. The weird thing, something about time and playing time here, Christian Shumate against Temple came in that game super early, like 3 or 4 minutes into the game, was in there playing. I was like, what is going on? You know, maybe Haith noticed something early that we weren't playing well or something, but he didn't take out Curtis Haywood. Curtis Haywood had 34 minutes, but Shumate had 11 total, which has got to be his most on the season so far. And so, you know, I'm seeing that and I'm like, okay, you know, maybe we're going to see a bigger role from Shumate in the future. And then East Carolina comes along and he gets 3 minutes. So I don't know what the plan is for Shumate, but maybe it was just a matchup thing. Hey, thought we could exploit something with Shumate against Temple and not against ECU, but that's how it went for some reason.
Yeah, and so just double checked. This was Ido's first start of the year.
Okay.
First start that he's had since January 7th of 2020 when he, you know, wasn't at Tulsa, so...
Yeah, nice. Okay, cool. Yeah, good for him. I mean, he deserved it. He's been playing so well, career high on against Temple, and then 16 and 8 against ECU. That's awesome. Like, he was doing great. Something I also wanted to note before we move on from East Carolina or from Temple. So we were down so much, you know, 22 in the first half, 19 at halftime, and down a lot of the second half too. But all of a sudden, we start full court pressing, right, and like late in that second half. And that worked wonders near the end of that game. It was steal after steal, getting easy buckets down the other end. Brought it within 10 with 2.5 minutes left. Couldn't finish the job, obviously lost by 9. But, you know, with the athletes we have on this team, we've got a lot of speed and, like, grit on defense. Guys like Joyner and Rochelle and Darian Jackson, you know, they are great. Like, they are tailor-made for hard-nosed full-court press D. And you're going to get burned every now and then playing a press. And maybe the reason we don't want to press people is it speeds up the game, you know, and we're not a high-scoring team generally. So maybe we try to keep the scoring to a minimum, so we don't want to press as much. But, man, like, we looked scary when we were playing that full-court press. Temple had no idea what was going on. We looked good. Like, I would like to see that every now and then. We don't have to play it all game, you know. We don't have to pull a Memphis and pressure everybody 100% of the time, but... Every now and then, you know, mix it up. It throws teams off when you mix up what you're doing on defense. So certainly would like to see more of that.
I think we should do it, make a point to do it earlier in the game if we're getting, like, putting ourselves in a hole. Like, if we had started that earlier against Temple, I think there's a good chance we could have, like, grinded out the win. I mean, we ended up losing by 9 when, I mean, if you look at what was going on in the first half, blew my mind that we got so close. Yeah. And, like, I was telling you, I wasn't able to watch this game because it was like noon or like 11 on a work day.
Right.
But I was just watching the box score. It's like, this felt, you know, like, I feel like Temple is the team. We've had their number the last couple of years, and like, we somehow always blow them out. It sucks being on this side, especially against like a lesser Temple.
Gosh, but, I know.
Yeah. I think if we had just switched to the full court press earlier, I think we could have gotten this one.
Yeah, I mean, we definitely would have had a better chance, I think, because they had no idea how to handle that. They were lost for like 5 minutes, you know, or not 5 minutes. Man, maybe it was like 5 minutes. I mean, it was a while that they had no idea what was going on. Eventually, they kind of got around and beat the press a few times. But man, when that first started, they were totally, you know, deer in the headlights. They had no idea what was going on. So would like to see it earlier would have been better, I agree. But hindsight's 20/20, I suppose. Want to emphasize the defense late against East Carolina again. So Darian Jackson, we talked about him a lot. I mean, that guy, you know, just straight up stripped the ball away like 2 or 3 times late in that game against ECU. It's awesome. You know, he first one was just like jumping up to, you know, put a hand in the face of a guy making a pass. and just totally just caught the ball in the air. You know, a lot of times people bat it away or something. He just catches it and runs down the floor. And so, you know, that's awesome. Straight just stole the ball off the dribble off a guy one time. He is an all first team, all American conference defensive player without question. And Elijah Joyner tweeted that also this past week. And I can't agree more, man. I mean, if he's not a first team all defense, who is? He's exactly what you want. Him and probably Brandon Rochelle might both make that team. Also, to continue on Rochelle there, he was D'ing up on Jaden Gardner late in the game and looked so good for a couple stretches in a row. One in particular, just straight up, bodied up on him, blocked his shot in his face, looked awesome. You know, tough to talk too much about Jaden Gardner because he put up 26 on us. But, you know, late, it was, you know, game coming down to the wire. It wasn't a 9-point game all the way down the stretch. It was close. And for a couple stretches down there, we shut them down. And then Darian Jackson and Rochelle, you know, took it on themselves on the offensive side as well. Rochelle scored 17 of his 21 points in the second half. So those two, Rochelle and Darian Jackson, absolutely put the team on their back and closed that game out. Two senior leaders to close it out. Very nice. And yeah, that was kind of the last thing I wanted to bring up about the two games. We already talked about playing time. I think that, you know, that's definitely a big thing to watch this coming week. If that trend of Haywood's minutes going down and Keyshawn Emery Simpson's minutes going down, he, by the way, also, you know, I talked more about Curtis Haywood's minutes going down, but Emery Simpson went from 25 minutes against Temple to 14 against ECU. So both those guys, Haywood and Emery Simpson, dropped about 10 minutes of playtime in one game stretch after Haith's comments. So definitely something to watch for this week, see if those guys' playing time continues to stay low. And I think, you know, if I were a betting man, I think it probably would. Some final thoughts before I move to player of the week here. There was a, you know, when we were getting beat so bad by Temple, I was upset, of course. And so I go around looking at Haith's contract information as one does when you're in a mood like that. And so I found a Tulsa World post from 2018. And it says the following, right? Earlier in the article, they're talking about how, you know, Haith was talking about how good we were in like the late 90s and stuff like that in basketball. And so the article text says, when Haith refers to 1994 to 2003, he's aware of how Hurricane basketball looked during its glory period. Haith says, quote, give me a chance, end quote. And Greg and TU decision makers are ready to talk about a contract extension. This is 2018. And when Haith suggests that the next step is consistent involvement in the NCAA tournament, there should be the understanding that any TU season without a meaningful postseason is an empty season. So taking that into account here, let's go with Ken Pom's predicted record for the rest of the year and say that Tulsa basketball finishes at 14-9 overall, 11-7 in conference. That's not going to get you an at-large bid, right? That's not good. You're not going to get to the NCAA tournament. Our best players and leaders this year, both, are clearly our seniors, Rochelle, Joyner, Darian Jackson. We do have Idowu and Richie coming back next year, which looks like a nice foundation to have. But there's definitely some young talent in Keyshawn Williams and Christian Shoemate. But not feeling overly optimistic about the future of this team after we lose those three guys, Rochelle, Joyner, and Darian. Haith originally signed a six-year contract back in April of 2014. Got a two-year extension onto that original contract in March of 2019, just a couple years ago. So that would be up this year, right? And I haven't seen anything, maybe I missed it, about extension talks or any conversation around that with his contract coming up in like 2 months. You know, I must be missing something, or a month and a half. So we'll see what happens there. But, you know, assuming that there hasn't been any talk, my thoughts, right? He's done an okay job. Not a terrible job. He's not the worst head coach we've ever had or anything like that. NIT in his first season. NCAA tournament in his second season. No postseason appearances since 2016. Although I think it's safe to say we almost definitely would have made the NIT last year had the postseason not been canceled. So that's not entirely fair to say that we haven't made the postseason since 2016, because we certainly probably would have last year. But it seems like we can expect pretty much to go between 15 and 20 win seasons every year. And that's not going to get you enough, or that's not going to be enough to get you into the tournament. And if Tulsa wants consistent appearances in the tournament, like Haith has basically said, that's the goal 6 years in. Obviously, it's his team completely now. It doesn't seem like he's the guy that's going to get us there. So in terms of like, you know, long-term looking, are we going to make the NCAA tournament this year? Are we going to make it in the future? This year, you know, me and you, Matt, were talking about it a little bit before we started recording. We'd basically have to win out, you know. If, you know, maybe we have a shot if we split with SMU. We had a guy on Twitter talking to us about this too, Teddy Martin. And it's like, man, I don't know. I think even if we win out, we might still be on the bubble. And we do have SMU twice, and UCF is a pretty good game. Cincinnati's somehow still in the top 100 in KenPom, but like
it's a weaker year for the conference overall. I mean, you have like Houston, mm-hmm. and then you have a huge gap between mm-hmm. SMU, who's probably second best team.
Yeah, Houston just beat SMU today by 20 or 22 or whatever it was. So it's like, man, it's going to be tough. You know, I don't know if we can do it even if we win out. You know, obviously, if we win out, that I assume that would mean we win the conference tournament. So that would get us in there. But if we win out into the conference tournament and then lose early in the tournament, I don't know if that's going to get it done. So
the Haith special.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know. I'm not feeling great about Haith. I'm not feeling great about the long term of the team at this point. I don't know. What are you feeling these days?
I'm at the point where I have been, Pat can say this. I have been like, man, you know, I wonder what would happen if we just lost out, you know, like maybe that wouldn't be the worst thing to happen. So Haith is a fine coach and he's brought a lot of stability, as we were like switching conferences and all that. And just with, a lot that has happened with the athletic department and all that. And I understand. And he like was willing to take a pay cut for part of it. And that's, you know, speaks a lot to like the integrity and like he's got TU's best interest at heart. But yep. I think if we want to be more competitive, and I don't know if I agree with the quote necessarily that we should be expecting like NCAA bids every year. I don't know if that's really where we're at. I think we're a once every three, once every four kind of just because that's kind of how a small school does it consistently. That's kind of what my expectations, and he hasn't lived up to that in the last 5 years. And so I don't know. I think I would be okay with just moving on and finding a young up and comer, because I feel like that's where Tulsa has had a lot of success in the past. And I think that ends up being a better fit for our program.
Very fair. I think I agree. And it'll be interesting to see what happens, because I don't know. I mean, I was looking around today just to find, is there talk about an extension or anything this year? I didn't see anything. Maybe I just totally whiffed.
Well, and I want you got to wonder, I mean, again, we have an interim athletic right. director, and how much of that do you want to have like your interim decide the next 4 or 5 years of TU sports? Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, you could have it like a new athletic director wants to bring in their own people. And so like Haight or Montgomery had a good year, so it's no longer a potential like football basketball reboot kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But I mean, you could see it. I like, would it blow me away if we ended up moving on from Haith? No. Would I be surprised if we extended him? Also, no. I mean, like, I could really see it going either way.
Yeah, I mean, it has to happen soon, though, right? Because the contract theoretically ends in a month and a half or 2 months or something. And so the interim, if he's going to do that, it's still going to be the interim at that point. And so my best guess, if I were to guess at what happens, is that Haith gets another, like, two-year extension. And, you know, we'll see what happens from there. But I would assume that would be his last straw.
Yeah, I mean, it's got to be, if it's that, I'm thinking two-year with expectation that you're making the tournament. Sometime like you have to, which is going to be tough because like you said, I feel like this is kind of we've been heading not in the right direction. Since, I mean, like last year was a great year and then this year is kind of like trending negative and we're losing some of our best players.
Yeah. Right. So, I mean, there are plenty of games left. Who knows? Like maybe we'll win out and it'll, you know, if we win out, I've got no complaints, right? That's a good season overall. We'd make the postseason almost definitely of some kind. And that's good, you know, but plenty of games left to play. Could go well, could go extremely poorly. We'll see. All right. So let's move on. Let's do our player of the week. I'll start this week. My thought for player of the week, it seems fairly clear cut. I don't know. The one I'm giving it to, Ray Dowu, right? He had an awesome week. Career high, same boat as you. Yeah, cool. Career high, like we said, 20 points at Temple, another 16 points at East Carolina, 8 rebounds against them as well. Got his first start over Ugbo this season. First start on Tulsa's team. Shot 66% from the field on 21 attempts this week. That is, if that's not a candidate for player of the week, that's ridiculous. You got somebody who's playing out of their minds. And he basically did play out of his mind. Like, he did really well. His hole, like, had some really, really nice hook shots, right and left-handed hook shots in there, I noticed. Just looked good pretty much across the board. Clearly deserved the start over Ugbo. Finally got it. And I think that's going to be the case, hopefully, for the rest of the season.
Yeah, and so if you're looking at just for both games, he was the best in both of them. He was good against Temple. A lot of other guys just weren't great against Temple or weren't great against East Carolina. So you have that consistency. The only other guy, Rochelle, was really good against East Carolina, but wasn't super great against Temple. So I kind of tossed him out. Elijah Joyner, I think, was a second pick for me. Because Jackson also his worst game of the season was against Temple, and then he had a very strong game against East Carolina, which is great. But Idowu, I feel like he's just becoming filling in very nicely for the gap that we with Igbanu's lost, and I feel like he's just filling the shoes, especially now he's improving as the season goes on. So I'm really excited for what he does the rest of the year.
Yeah, man, me too. He looks like he's really coming on, obviously playing with a ton of confidence. So hopefully that continues. I know he's a very, really confident dude. So, 20 and 16 this week, that's huge. Hopefully that continues on against SMU and UCF this week. Okay, so let's do a little bit of preview about those two teams. So like I said, we have been on the road 6 of our last 7 games. We close out the season now, though, with 5 of our next 7, our final 7, being in the Reynolds Center at home. So that is a welcome change. It's been a road-heavy schedule for sure this year. Will be very nice to get back at home. So home versus SMU, that is on Wednesday the 3rd on ESPNU, 8 p.m. SMU is number 52 in KenPom, number 52 in the net ranking, so same ranking across the board there. They are 9-3 overall, 5-3 in the conference. I didn't even update that. They just played today against Houston and lost. So they're 5-4 in the conference now, 9-4 overall after getting blown out by 22 in Houston. So I think they are probably below us in the conference standings now. Let me look that up. Standings. Yeah, we are one above them. So SMU has dropped from 3rd to 5th in the conference after that loss to Houston today on Sunday. And we are 4th at 6-4 in conference and 9-6 overall, which is pretty wild. They are a good team, right? I mean, they've got a nice non-conference road win over Dayton. That's probably their best non-conference win. They split the series with Memphis. They played them twice in a row. Each team won at home. And they're a good team, right? Their junior guard, Kendrick Davis, straight baller. Like, one of my favorite players to watch in the league. He's been in kind of a down stretch recently. He didn't play very well against Houston. He played pretty poorly in the last couple of games as well. But he is awesome. Like, he is fast. He plays hard. He shoots good shots for the most part. Sometimes he'll force something up from the short corner. It doesn't look great, but man, he is good. Leads SMU in scoring, assists, and steals. 17 points a game, 7.7 assists per game, 1.5 steals a game. He's a stud. So basically, I'm excited to just watch him. Like, that seems like a perfect matchup for Darian Jackson. Just follow him around. I love the box and one concept on defense. We never do it, but if we were to, it would be nice to play box and one on Kendrick. See how that goes. So he's definitely one to watch. The other guy, they've got a couple other guys to keep an eye on. Junior forward for Ron Hunt, second in scoring, 12.4 points a game. Also leads them in rebounds and blocks with 8 rebounds a game and 1 block. And then they've got a couple Oklahoma boys over there that we've watched for the last several years. Ethan Shagwa from right here in Tulsa. He is 4th in scoring, 10 points a game. And then Tyson Jolly is a senior for them. Pretty good player as well. He did not play very well against Houston today. He also missed 9 games to start the year due to, I think he had some deaths in his friend group. I don't know what the story was there, but he sat out for a while trying to get over that. But he is back playing again, which is good. So he's a good one. Emmanuel Bandamel also plays a lot for them. So those are kind of their main dudes. They're a solid team. They're no joke. They did just get hammered by Houston, but Houston is hammering everybody. So I don't think there's anything to watch there in terms of is SMU falling off? SMU's a good team, and playing them at home is not a, not a guaranteed win by any stretch of the phrase. They're solid. They've got good talent all over the place. The thing to watch, another thing to keep an eye on, their head coach, Tim Jankovic. He has been out the last couple of games. He tested positive for COVID-19 like two weeks ago or last week or something. So it's been an interim kind of in place coach for them. I don't know who it's been, but some assistant has been playing the role of head coach for them. So if he's out, that could have an impact on the game as well. So something to keep an eye on there. And that's all I've got on SMU. Matt, did you want to add anything before we move to UCF?
Mm-mm. No, sir.
Cool. So UCF is next up, another home game. That's on Saturday, February 6th. And that is no TV info on that one yet. I think every other game this season is already listed as some channel. This one has nothing on it. So not sure where that's going to be played. Regardless, it is Saturday at 11 a.m. UCF, such a weird team this year, man. They're number 96 in KenPom, 95 in net. They're 4-7 overall and 2-6 in the conference. And they straight fell off a cliff after they had this COVID delay a couple weeks back. They started the season with wins over Auburn and number 15 Florida State, right? Like, hot start. Looked really good. Johnny Dawkins' team, a lot of talent on the team, it seemed like. Obviously, they beat two big-time teams early. And then they just cannonballed. Like, they lost to Houston on December 26th, had a game postponed that next week, got back for one game, lost to South Florida on the road. Then they had two more games postponed in a row, and then they lost three straight. So five straight losses in that stretch there, three after the postponement. They finally got another road win against East Carolina at home, but then they played Wichita State on the road just a couple days ago and lost in overtime. You know, so, you know, they're playing Wichita State in Wichita and losing in overtime. That Wichita State team is talented. So maybe they're on the up again after being down for a while after that drop-off. They do play Memphis tomorrow, Monday, and again, like two times in a row before they play us on Saturday. So we'll definitely get to see if they're actually back to where they were early in the year with how they do against Memphis. That's definitely something to watch, is how UCF plays this week before we get them this weekend. Some of their leaders, right? Their leading scorer is a senior guard. Never what you want to see. The best player being a senior, that's rough. Brandon Mahan, 14.6 points a game, shooting 47% from the three-point line. That is a recipe for disaster against a Tulsa team that does not defend the three ball that well, generally. Sophomore guard Dre Fuller leads them in rebounds and assists. Sophomore guard Darren Green Jr., I'm sure we all probably remember his name from last year, second in scoring for them. Killed us from three last season as a kind of unknown freshman. Now people know him much better. He's shooting 43.6% from three. So they've got a 47% three-point shooter and a 43.6% three-point shooter. That is just terrifying. Like, for reference, our best three-point shooter that actually shoots, like, a decent amount of threes, Austin Ritchie, 36%. So they got two guys shooting way better than that who shoot a lot of threes. So we have to defend the three ball against UCF because they shoot them and they're good at it. Their leading big man is Isaiah Adams, freshman, averaging 11 points, 5 rebounds. And Johnny Dawkins is their head coach. Been there since 2016. Almost left after their tournament run a couple years ago, but stuck around trying to rebuild the team after they lost all those seniors.
I'm just intrigued because, I mean, they're so much better than their record indicates. Yeah. I feel like we've talked about that. I don't know. I'm nervous. Just because our offensive showing against Temple wasn't great, and even against East Carolina, it was very close, and it wasn't until the end where we kind of locked it down defensively. Mm-hmm. And I think UCF will be a very good litmus test for how we're going to do, like, to close out the season. Just because we play them twice, we play SMU twice, and so just to kind of have that... if we can show that our offense is good enough to take down a team like UCF, that'll be good for the rest of the year. Because Cincinnati is still on the schedule, and like Cincinnati's been disappointing, but they're still 83 in KenPom. Like, they're not bad. Like, we still have some pretty tough games that we need to show that we've kind of learned from East Carolina, and I think UCF is probably the best test to prove.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. They are certainly better than their record, 4-7 overall. But they're 96 in KenPom, right? That's not a joke. That's a top 100 team. And like you look around at the KenPom rankings, and like the teams around them are, you know, like 10-3, 7-3, like they have 12-3. They always good records. And then you look at, oh, UCF 4-7. And then you've got Cincinnati at number 83, 3-7. So you got all these like American Conference teams that have terrible records, but are, you know, KenPom shows that they're actually fairly decent teams. So it's a weird deal in the American this year, man, but such is life. All right, let's take a quick look around the conference and we'll close things out with some other notes to get to before we wrap it up. So some conference ball. Tuesday, the 26th, we lost to Temple. I'm not going to talk about that one anymore. Memphis beat SMU in Memphis, 76-72. Tyson Jolly, who we mentioned before from Muskogee, Oklahoma here, had 15 for SMU that game, so good game from him. But Memphis got the win on Tuesday. SMU did play them again. They played them twice in a row. On Thursday, they played at SMU, and SMU got the home win by 2. So they split the series with Memphis this week. On Wednesday, the 27th, UCF beat East Carolina 71-64. On Thursday, the 28th, Houston beat Tulane by 23. Not very surprising there. It was, again, like a 30-point game in the first half for Houston over Tulane, and then Tulane scrapped back a little bit in the second half. Saturday, the 30th, we beat East Carolina. Wichita State beat UCF by 5 in overtime, which we talked about a little bit already. Brandon Mahan, 17 points for the Knights. Tyson Etienne for Wichita, 29 points. That guy is balling out. And then today, Sunday, a couple crazy games. Tulane, and you know, I mentioned this when we were talking about how bad it was that we lost to Temple. Tulane beat Temple in Philadelphia by 17. Crazy, man. Like, maybe Tulane's turning it around, or maybe it just shows how terrible that Temple loss was. Probably, maybe both. You know, it's a rough deal there. And then we mentioned this one already also, but today, Sunday, Houston beat SMU in Houston by 22 or something like that. So big win for Houston. They've got a serious contender there as a potential one seed in the NCAA tournament. Another around the conference note that you put in the notes, mate. You want to talk about this one?
Yeah. So just like last week, we talked about UCF athletic director leaving Tennessee. Well, his first big hire as their athletic director, I assume he had something to do with it, is Josh Heupel is now no longer in the American, which is honestly probably, if you ask UCF fans, probably Danny White's last gift to the university is to hire away their coach that they all seem to hate. And it's definitely been like they've kind of been trending in the wrong direction ever since their first, like, their national championship season. And so to do it where they get rid of Heupel and also get a buyout and don't have to, like, pay him lots of money to leave is a win-win for UCF. No, I mean, it's just interesting because Heupel was, what, at OU, got fired from OU, and is somehow, like, hasn't really done much and is now somehow a head coach in an SEC university.
Dude, like, he was Mizzou offensive coordinator, and he was, like, mediocre, like did not put up great numbers for Mizzou, and they, you know, they had some decent offenses with him, but
yeah, I think it's just because he's so fast paced. Like, he runs a very quick offense. It just worked really well with UCF, which is why I think they pulled him from Mizzou. But yeah, I don't really see why he's getting a bunch of head coaching jobs.
Man, you're right, though. Like, everybody, at least in our Twitter world, like, everybody in UCF was excited when that happened. I could not believe it. I was like, Tennessee would be so, so stupid to do this. Unless Danny White's playing that 4D chess over there and just, like, getting out of UCF to pull Josh Heupel away and also set up a home-and-home between Tennessee and UCF. How nice would that be? But, yeah, like, it's bizarre, man. Like, I would be thrilled if I was a UCF fan. I was not we were talking about how good and how much Danny White meant to UCF, and we were talking about, you know, you could pretty much guarantee that he's going to make a good hire, and I was like, yeah, except for Josh Heupel, right? Like, that was a kind of a swing and a miss there. But then he hires him again at Tennessee. I could not believe that. Like, I don't know what they're doing over there, but good on them. Like, and I also saw today, you know, 3 days after Heupel leaves UCF, or 4 days, however long ago that was. Heupel never got a 4-star recruit to come to UCF after all their winning and talent that they had over there over the last several years. today, 3 or 4 days after he leaves, they land their first four-star recruit, and Heupel never got him. They don't even have a head coach right now. Randy Shane is their interim, and they get a four-star dude from Hawaii, a receiver. So big get for UCF, and even more damning on Josh Heupel. All right, so let's wrap it up here. Just a couple final notes. First, the Hula Bowl. That is a kind of upperclassman-led ball playing in Hawaii, 8 o'clock tonight as of Sunday. So when this episode comes out, it will have already been played on CBS Sports Network. Tulsa football has got two guys playing in that game, Zach Smith and Corey Taylor. So I would tell you to like tune in stuff, but hopefully you already have and are listening to this now. And we're thinking back about how well Zach Smith and Corey Taylor played on Sunday night. But as of right now, we have not seen that. So I'll be watching at 8 o'clock. Should be fun. Always cool to see some old guys from the team playing who, you know, they're done for TU. So it's like the last chance to see them play some college football, which is going to be pretty cool. So I'll definitely be tuning in. And then Tulsa women's basketball beat East Carolina the same day the men's team did, which is pretty cool. Both teams played ECU on Saturday, and by the same margin too. Men won by 9, women won by 9, 68-59 win for the women, 77-68 win for the men. And then Matt, you wanted to you put in something in the show notes about the ball game.
Yeah, just so TU came out, not a ton of details, just because I think they cited privacy issues, and so they haven't named any names, but 13 players are facing some sort of disciplinary action for their role in the brawl against Mississippi State. I think it varies from community service for some up to suspension of I think it was a max of one game.
Oh, really? I didn't see that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the press release said that. I also might have, just from talking to somebody who knows people in the athletic department. But yeah, there's no, like, we don't know any names. Mm-hmm. But I mean, so TU has come out and done that. The American has accepted TU's investigation and are happy with that. So there's no sanctions from the conference on top of it. Mm-hmm. But we still, there's been nothing from Mississippi State or the SEC. Even like, if you ask them, they'd probably be like, what brawl? Like, nothing happened. Yeah. Like, that's what it feels like.
I know. And like, we talked about it with Jeremy, and like, back then, you know, even then, I think Mississippi State's AD had put out like a 2-sentence statement or something. That was like all they had seen. You know, nobody else from Mississippi State, and then nobody from the SEC had said anything. But I was like, you know, eventually they're going to, right? They have to, you know? But no, it's just, there's been nothing. It blows my mind. Yeah, we haven't seen anything from them at all, which is really weird. Another note on that press release there, for some reference here, looking back on that 2014 brawl between Memphis and BYU, just trying to compare it to a previous American Conference brawl and the results from that. Memphis had 12 players straight up suspended from that bowl game. We're having 13 players, quote, disciplined, right? Only some of which will be actually suspended. And the lightest, I think, another, you know, you mentioned community service and game suspensions. Another thing that they had in that release was a letters of reprimand. So I think some of them might just get like a note that says like, don't do that again or something. Yeah. I don't know what that means, but it's definitely a lighter punishment than the Tigers got. I assume part of that is because TU came out so early and took this head on, and the American Conference didn't have to step in. I assume, I don't know what happened with Memphis. Maybe the American Conference got in there and made it a little bit more severe for Memphis, and we were on it quick enough to kind of hit it on the head and take it all ourselves, which looks good on us. I mean, you know, it creates more press, I guess, for the negativity of the bowl game brawl. But I think it's the right thing to do that TU jumped on this so early, owned it, took responsibility for it, and are punishing players as they see fit, which the American Conference clearly agrees with. Okie dokie. If you like the show, please do make sure you subscribe to it on whatever podcast app you're listening to this on. Share it on Twitter. Tell a friend about it. Leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. Would really, really appreciate that. Give us some feedback. If you want to support us, you can find a couple of different ways to do that on our website. Go to thegoldenhurricast.com/support. And finally, you can find us on Twitter and Instagram at goldenhurricast, or you can send us an email, and that email address is thegoldenhurricast@gmail.com. Thank you very much for listening, everybody, and we will talk to you next week.
Stay golden.